Jeff Risley is the founder of Sales Health Alliance, which is a consultancy that focuses on the mental health and well-being of sales professionals. They provide resources, education, and support to people in sales who may be experiencing stress, burnout, and other mental health challenges. In this episode, we discuss the importance of mental health initiatives in organizations and the impact they have on sales performance. With alarming statistics showing that over 60% of sellers struggle with mental health and stress, Jeff provides data-driven insights on how addressing mental health can actually improve sales performance more than focusing solely on point problems like prospecting. Jeff also shares personal experiences and advice on how to frame mental health from a sales leadership perspective and unpacks why people change jobs, often due to underlying mental health issues. He also talks about the downside of burning and churning talent. With practical tips and mindset tricks, Jeff provides valuable insights from his work as a consultant at Sales Health Alliance and his book on normalizing conversations around mental health within sales organizations. This episode is a must listen for anyone in sales leadership looking to improve their team's performance and well-being. Hey everyone, well, this is a really, really important topic, near and dear to my heart. As someone who has grown up in sales my entire career as a frontline seller and as well as a frontline manager, I understand firsthand the burnout, the stressors that go into carrying a quota, driving revenue. And especially for those that are, you know, highly driven, this is something that you put those things together and you can be pretty burnout pretty fast. So, you know, I look at my experience, Jeff, around this issue. And one thing that keeps coming to mind, I told you this in our prep, was the whole white knuckling analogy. And I feel like that's what I did most of my career. I didn't have the tools, the resources, a book like what you've written so that I can use, where I would go into client meetings, I'd go into presentations, and I was going through stuff, whether it was internal within the organization and I was struggling at, or something I was dealing with personally. And I know I was a distracted seller because I was just white knuckling the stress that I was going through. I was grinding my teeth at night, don't want to get out of bed. You know, the depression, anxiety is something that a lot of people deal with. So one thing that I think we'll talk about here is that depression, anxiety isn't the only idea or the only, you know, point of focus when we think about mental health. But I want to ask you as a first question, do mental health initiatives really work within organizations?
Yeah, they totally work. Like, I think it's something that's completely overlooked over the last couple of years. I've worked with, I think it's up to 7,000 different sellers and sales teams. And it's been proven firsthand just based off of the feedback that I've gotten. But just in terms of, if we wanted to look at raw data specifically to see how big a problem this is within sales, there's things like 63% of sellers are struggling with their mental health. There's 79% of sellers are feeling stressed and highly stressed. And within this data, I've been able to find tons and tons of correlations that show when we improve things like stress and in mental health, we see a direct correlation between improved sales performance and things like feeling happier and healthier, a reduction in negative thinking, and sellers being able to get more deep and restorative sleep each and every night. And this isn't just within the work that I've done. This is if you actually were to go and look at all these different factors and see the impact stress and mental health is on, like, real scientific in-depth studies, the correlations are really all aligned and they're actually showing causation effects, which is really, really important for leaders and sellers to be mindful of.
I think one stat that stood out around this as well was that the World Health Organization actually has a stat from a study that they did where every dollar invested into scaling up treatment for depression, anxiety within the organization leads to a $4 return in better health and ability to work. So I don't know if that's not telling, I don't know what is. But, you know, there's a lot of controversy around this, you know.
With that stat specifically, it really gets back to this idea of exponential improvements. And the way I like to visualize it is, if you think about all the different skills or actions that a seller or a sales leader needs to make every single day,
yep,
whether that's cold calling or writing some new email copy, or as a sales leader, coaching someone or leading them through a one-on-one, the challenge that we have right now with sales training and coaching is we're trying to address each one of those skills individually. We're trying to do things like well, let's invest into some prospecting training, or let's invest into negotiation training.
Right.
And when we think about exponential growth, if we think about all of those skills, it's all rooting back to one thing, which is the health of the mind and the health of the seller. How is that person showing up each and every day? So if we can directly improve how we're thinking, feeling, and what we're doing each and every day, it's going to have massive, massive impacts on all of these different actions that sellers are taking. And to sort of build on that stat that you mentioned with the World Health Organization, what I found was this really strong correlation between stress and mental health. In the 2022 State of Mental Health and Sales Report, we found that among sellers who describe their stress levels as highly stressed, only 11% rated their mental health as good or very good, with 0% describing it as excellent. And when we looked at the sellers that felt relaxed or very relaxed, 79% rated their mental health as good, very good, or excellent, which is this massive, massive jump. I think it's about 7 times more effective at more better mental health was sort of that correlation we saw. And it really, again, goes back to this idea of exponential thinking and getting back to root causes of underperformance and the different levers that we can pull to help ensure someone's showing up their best selves each day.
So two things come to mind, though, for me as a tension point to this, and just bear with me in the argument. A, recruiting, that comes to mind, like solving for this through the vetting of people, having them take the profile assessments that are 300 questions, asking 2 different questions, 5 different ways, and all of that stuff, right? Like that's one way to maybe find people who have better mental health. But then those that are on the job, you know, as a frontline manager for many years, it's you try to ask the question, how are you doing? Is there anything I can help with? But, you know, there's this risk with getting too close to your people and then having to manage that dynamic when it comes to coaching time. And then there's like the bounds, like the limits. How does a leader sort of help someone with their personal issues more? You know, if they're going through a divorce, if their kid is sick and is in the hospital, you know, like these are real things that are happening that they can't really address themselves directly. So what would be your advice to, you know, to that manager who's dealing with someone who maybe they have no impact on what's going on outside of work? How do they deal with that?
Good question. And I think it comes down to so just a couple of things in terms of what you said. I think it's important for that manager to think or to realize that mental health isn't black and white. It's not something that you have or don't have. Mm. When you think about mental health as something you have and don't have, that is usually a sign that you're thinking about mental health in the extremes. So when you think about mental health, it's a definition much closer to mental illness. Mm-hmm. Thinking about things like depression, or it's thinking about someone that's highly burnt out or very, very anxious. And you're trying to think, well, I don't want those people in my organization, as opposed to thinking about mental health and defining it, what it actually is a spectrum of well-being that we're all fluctuating along on a daily basis based on what's happening in our internal environment, like our thoughts and our feelings, as well as our external environment, like the stressors that we're facing every single day, the people we interact with, the deals that we're competing for and potentially losing each day. These are all things that are impacting how much fluctuation happens up and down that mental health spectrum. So if you are a sales leader and you're saying, one of my core goals is to have one, a team that performs at a high level every single day, but two, has a team that is consistent in their performance each and every day. Mm-hmm. If you have members on your team or you yourself as an individual is fluctuating rapidly up and down that spectrum, it is going to be impossible to drive high performance and do it consistently. So your goal as a leader to say, well, how do I equip my sellers and my team with the effective skills and the strategies? And how do I myself create a culture of psychological safety to prevent fluctuation, make my team resilient to those stressors that are taking place? And two, how do I collectively move more of my sellers to a place in a state where they're thriving, as opposed to a state where they're coping or they're struggling or they're really, really unwell, which is mental illness? So that's one piece. It's like, that is how you really need to frame mental health from a leadership perspective. And then two, the other thing that's really important to understand is as sellers or as recruiters, for example, we like to think that people are changing jobs for things like more money. We like to think that they're changing jobs because this is a really great opportunity and they really want to work for a company. It's very easy to
hear what we want to hear in that process, for sure.
Yeah. For sure. We really want to be naive to the fact that, and think of these like really positive things as why someone's changing jobs, as opposed to thinking maybe there was harassment. Maybe there was, maybe they're struggling with burnout. Maybe it was a very toxic environment. Maybe they are really just like in a really, really difficult environment and there was things going on that they couldn't control. That stuff just doesn't go away overnight. Like that person is coming into your organization. The vast majority of us are. So again, it's in your best interest.
Well, they're dealing with some trauma, right? I mean, that's
dealing
that's
with the, some, right. They're dealing with some trauma for sure. So it's in that recruiter, in HR, in your, as a sales manager, it's in your best interest to say, this is likely happening.
No matter who you hire.
No matter who you hire, it's not you have it or you don't have it. Like we're all struggling to some extent.
Right.
Like,
well, that's what I mean, though, is like you're trying to find the person. If we do have a scale here, it's not black or white or, you know, some binary view, you know, like you're trying to find someone on the latter side of that metric. You're trying to find that person with the 70% good rating of their personal well-being and mental health, right? So So, you're not going to find the perfect person, but you're trying to vet for that as best you can through the hiring process. But your point is that no matter what, you're looking through a cloud of smoke and you're not really probably going to find that real issue that they may have left for. And I mean, some people are transparent in the process. And it's, I think they do that intentionally where they say, hey, I had a toxic manager who was, you know, just berated me or you know, these sorts of things, where I had an environment for my coworkers that was, you know, unbearable. These things can come out in the interview process, but then it's on us to make sure that we don't replicate it when they come on board, I guess. And that's what they're trying to vet for themselves. But I mean, there's got to be, that's what I go to with this, is find people who have strong mental health as strong as can be in the interview process as best you can as a potential way of addressing this.
Again, like, I think that's one way to approach it for sure. I think at the same time, though, like I believe that like anxiety in sales is not optional. It's really part of everyday life. So it's different. Like it's not necessarily something that you like weed out. And again, back to the sort of like the data that I was talking about, like 79% of sellers are stressed or highly stressed. So if you're trying to vet and get into that state of like the 11% that's not, like that's an impossible task. So it's,
well,
like,
maybe you're not trying to find the ones not stressed. Correct. You're right. Maybe you're trying to find the ones that know how to deal with stress, know how to deal with challenging. So they have some coping mechanisms that they kind of come in.
Totally. Totally agree. Like it's, you would ideally like someone that is putting in the work. They understand that this is a high stress environment and they're doing things to take care of themselves, to prepare themselves for success. I totally agree. And I think that conversation doesn't happen enough during the hiring process. Like sales leaders aren't, or managers aren't diving into what does that day-to-day look like? Like, are they taking good care of themselves? Are they getting restful sleep? Because myself, again, I would never dequalify someone because they were anxious or they weren't sleeping or they weren't exercising.
Fair.
I would look at that as, okay, like provided this person ticks all the boxes to fit the role that I'm looking to hire for, when they start, these are the first key areas that I need to support them with before we actually even start looking at sales training and sales coaching. Like I need to make sure that I'm working with them to get better sleep, to help them exercise more effectively. And that's because I have that toolkit that I've built over the last couple of years and what I've been doing through Sales Health Alliance that a lot of sales leaders don't, because if you hire that person that's underslept and you start trying to hammer down more product knowledge or training, like it's an inefficient way to do it. So I think ultimately it's how do we have these conversations more openly, not to disqualify someone, but to say, okay, I understand what motivates this person. I understand how they're taking care of themselves. And here are the different areas that I can support them as their leader when they do start up the organization.
Very good. Well, you mentioned your Sales Health Alliance. So I want to get to that, but mm-hmm. let's go back a little further first to your career in sales. You've been a frontline seller yourself, and that's, I'm sure, where a lot of the origin story of the book comes from, I would imagine. So what can you talk to us about in terms of your sales career and the stress that you dealt with as a seller?
Yeah, so I experienced it firsthand right out of the gate. Like, I think a lot of, again, the sort of a blind spot within the sales industry was I went straight from university into a sales role. And when you think about it, that fresh grad, the extent of stress that they've experienced is maybe they had some heartbreak in university or high school, or they were really worried about
they failed a class
or like a final exam.
Yeah.
That's their like stress baseline. And they've, again, it's very temporary, it's short-lived, as opposed to what you experience in sales, which is constant daily stress, this need to perform at a high level. Your emotions are ping-ponging all over the place as you go from really high highs to really low lows. It's just a totally harsh environment that new seller is just totally under-equipped for. So for me, and how that sort of manifested was, I was a top performer initially, and I was doing really well. But then what started to happen was I had really bad anxiety. I had insomnia, and I'd get these really nasty panic attacks in the middle of the night. And it was sort of through that experience when I started to realize that this is not sustainable. I first went to see my doctor, who prescribed me some anxiety medication, which I tried for 2 to 3 months, really hated how it made me feel. I felt like I lost touch with my intuition and my emotions and the things I was relying on to be a top performer. Going to therapy 12 years ago when I started in sales was still highly stigmatized. And that's where I was really in this position to, and I had the awareness, thankfully, to say, I really enjoy this working in sales. I love the career growth that you have, the money you can make, the camaraderie. But if I wanted to maintain this career, I'd need to figure out a way to take better care of myself. And it really became a passion of mine to learn about what mental health is. How does the brain react to stress? What are the different levers that I could be pulling on a daily basis to take better care of myself, to get to that state where stress is less of an issue and less of a factor? And over the next couple of years, I just started working on myself, doing the inner work, kind of expanding this toolkit that I was building. And I didn't realize how important this was until July of 2018. I just launched my first sales consulting website. 3 days after that, I was diagnosed with testicular cancer. And it was sort of through that experience when I realized the same strategies I was using to take care of my mental health and sales, I naturally started to execute on during this next stressful period of my life. And as Sales Health Alliance started to build, it became clear that, like I said, anxiety in sales is not optional. And if every seller on the planet describes working in sales as high pressure, well, why has no one ever taught us how to thrive under pressure? Why is that not sales 101? What are the, like, how do you take care of your mindset, build resilience, take better care of your mental health? These topics that are foundational to high performance within stressful environments is just never discussed. And that's how the business has sort of evolved, to really focus on helping sellers thrive under pressure so that they can perform each and every day.
It makes absolute and total sense. It's something that I've tried to pride myself on throughout the years. Well, you know, working in a stressful profession, still trying to stay mentally sharp, going to the gym, eating right, sleeping well, you know, leaning into personal relationships whenever at all possible, so that I'm not carrying guilt around because I'm not engaged in those relationships. I would imagine, though, that the diagnosis has a lot to do with your go forward from there in terms of motivation and being inspired and these sorts of things. I actually had David Premier on, who talked about his diagnosis as well on the show. And I think you two talked about it on an interview on, I think it was on his podcast. And so it's good and I'm glad that you guys are coming out sharing this with people, because I mean, it affects a lot of people. And so it's the stress outside of the job that it can have an effect on our day-to-day life. That's what I was mentioning at the top. And that's what I'm sure you were dealing with that. But you said that anxiety is not an option in sales. Can you double click on that? Like, why is that, right? Is it just, is it the quotas? Is it the rejection? Is it micromanaging managers? Is it all of the above? Like, what, in your perspective, what is those top things that are creating this high pressure, stressful environment within the sales work?
Yeah, it's like, it's all of it. It's like all, it's, you want to think about it, stressors. Like, there's a lot of stressors within mm-hmm. sales. So to your point, like you said, is it the deals falling through? Is it getting reset back to zero? Is it the micromanagement? It's structurally, there's the way sales is set up is very much structurally meant to be like this idea of like a lone wolf environment. You say there's this false sales team when it's a group of individuals that are pretending to be on a team. So when you're trending behind, it's very easy to feel excluded or not part of the tribe and feeling like your identity is falling apart if you're not hitting these. Like there's all of these things that, again, no one has ever been really trained or taught how to do on a consistent basis within sales. And a good example would be like, you would never say that playing hockey or playing American football is a safe sport. Like you would just, that is just not something that you would ever say.
Fair. Yeah. Sales is a contact sport.
Sales is a contact sport. So there are things that you do to mitigate those stressors and you mitigate the impact these getting hit has on your body by wearing pads and a helmet, learning how to take a tackle, running certain plays. Rest and recovery is a big piece. So there's things that these athletes are doing to ensure that they can be consistent and perform at a high level over the long term. But that same approach hasn't transitioned to sales. We're still in this state of sales is stressful and it's really dangerous and you're going to get hurt, but everyone on their own, see you later.
No. You knew the job was dangerous when you signed up,
which is like, just
don't hop in the kitchen if you can't take the heat, all these things.
Totally. And you can apply it to so many different industries. Like you would never send a Marine into battle without a bulletproof vest and a helmet. Like
God, it's extreme.
It's extreme for sure. But like when you think about burnout being this ongoing endemic and people are literally shortening their lives because of the consistent chronic stress that they're under. Like, what are we doing here, guys? Like, or everyone, like, we got it. Like, this isn't like a wake up. And I think that I wrote about this recently. I think one of the silver linings of this pandemic is I think sales teams and leaders have been able to justify this approach. Because there's this idea of burning and churning talent of we can hire someone.
Yeah, you posted about this. Was it last week? Actually, I had this post up. I'm glad you're going there.
You could burn and churn talent. Like it's no problem because there's a fresh batch of like new talent that you could sort of bring in and burn and churn and get rid of. And it's this revolving door of talent that only sticks around for a year and a half. And
26% attrition rate, I think it is. In sales.
Something like that.
Harvard has a 26-25% attrition rate within sales teams. So, I mean, and then it's no different when you get into sales leadership. It's just, you know, you're turning over the whole sales work every 2 to 3 years, effectively.
100%. And that currently today is the norm, which I think is changing because that norm is no longer feasible when
it's not aligned with more with less, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Doesn't align with more with less, doesn't align with getting the most from people. And to get the most from people, they have to stick around and they have to be healthy. Mm-hmm. The costs involved with recruiting and hiring, replacing talent, that is where we're at right now. Like we're in this paradigm shift that I think is going to be pretty substantial to leaders and organizations finally saying, oh, we've been getting this wrong. Like our people and getting the most from them is number one priority.
Hilman Soray was on the podcast and I asked him about a similar issue, but different. And he was talking about employee lifetime value and how we just miss the mark as organizations to put that as a frontline metric within our organizations and how we're developing our people. Because we were talking about coaching and development and these sorts of things and why that's important within the sales organization. But when you think about what you just said, getting the most out of our people, putting a metric to that we can measure ourselves on and looking at lifetime value of an employee, when you think about the different positions that they go into, the IP that they're able to collect over time, right? There's a lot of value that goes into the employee. And then you think about, just as a total sidebar here, we had an employment attorney on the podcast and we were talking about non-competes and this issue of how companies will invest a tremendous amount of dollars into developing their employees. And then part of the reasons that they like the non-compete is so that they don't take that training and leave. Right. And so it just, the lifetime value of our employees is a key metric to really encapsulate what you're talking about so that we can put some numbers to it and not just, and start measuring our attrition rates differently. But I agree with you 100%. The more with less, extending that life period of how long people stay within our organizations, tremendously important and goes right to the bottom line of your business. And the number one cost of an organization is payroll. So if you can maximize, the investment that you're putting into your people and extend that lifetime value, right, you're getting a bigger return. Can you talk about the downsides real quick of not investing into initiatives? I think you had some stats around that I mentioned, I saw in the book.
Do you mind reminding me specifically the stats? There's a lot.
Yeah, I have looked in my notes. There was the downside of not investing into, where are you? Crap, I lost it.
That's okay.
70% of employees said that they would quit if another employer offered better policies to reduce burnout. That was one thing that came out of the downside of neglecting mental health under the initiatives.
Yeah, so there's huge downsides, and that's one in terms of if you're not investing into mental health, this is a growing area that employees are treating as a top priority for them when they are evaluating new places to work. So if you don't, again, that
by quitting, low productivity, I mean, just disengaged employees altogether, I'd imagine.
Totally. But then if you want to sort of put more data around it, I think it was Virgin Pulse. Their research and what they found is presenteeism. Presenteeism is essentially when someone shows up to work, but they are not fully engaged in what they're doing. So they're there, but again, experiencing low performance. And what they found is businesses lose on average per employee 57 working days per year due to that presenteeism. So they're losing days. So that's like at a micro level, that's someone who would normally take them 10 minutes to write an email. That's them taking 30 minutes to write an email, or that's them caught in, again, brain fog, burnout, whatever you want to talk about. Like that's
making
sort of
18 calls, not 38 calls. Just the whole bit.
Yeah. Or if they're in a state where they would only make 20 calls to book two meetings, they have to make 40 calls to book two meetings because they mess up the first few because they're not thinking properly. So they lose again. So 57 days per year. So again, if that is a number that we're looking at, like, that is tremendous amounts of money being left on the table. And if you think about how much someone's monthly quota is, what they're working towards, how many average, what their daily sales metrics are, if you essentially just do metrics times 57, those are the world lost days, that's how much you're losing out on. How many calls don't get made, how many meetings don't get booked because of those days that are being lost. And it's an exponential number, which is huge. I have an ROI calculator on my website so people can actually plug in their specific sales team metrics to see how much revenue they're actually leaving on the table. But it's massive. Not only is it a flight risk, but it's just like, this is money you could have and revenue you could have that is just not being captured.
Sales effectiveness, employee engagement,
totally
all hits in all the cylinders. So tell us more about Sales Health Alliance, if you can.
Yeah. So again, Sales Health Alliance is really built to help sellers thrive under pressure. And this is primarily being done through training programs and resources that focus on the areas of mindset and mental health and stress management, areas that are not commonly focused on within sales, to help them unlock peak mental performance. And it really started as simply writing. Just, I started sharing ideas and resources and blogs. And over time, the more as I was writing, the more sellers and leaders like, this is really great. Like, this resonated, keep going, keep going. And it really evolved into this business that I have today. That's, again, like I said, serving this overlooked area that's critical to peak sales performance on a regular basis.
And this is through a consulting model, I believe, right? So you're providing a professional service to organizations where you come in and help them with uncovering root causes, and then maybe helping map the path forward and helping them upskill. Is that right?
Yeah. So there's like different levels. So there's like, obviously I have a book out called Stress Less, Sell More. There's more general speaking engagements, like 1 hour, 90 minute speaking engagements that are great for like sales kickoffs. But where the business is really focused on right now is taking a diagnostic approach. So really looking at teams specifically and uncovering root causes of underperformance. So rather than saying, hey, Jeff, like, I want you to do a session on stress management, let's actually pull back the curtain and see where the team is struggling. Is it sleep? Is it nutrition? Is it exercise? Is it more company related? Are there a lot of administrative tasks that are creating red tape and making it harder for sellers to perform? Are they disconnected from company goals? Do they not believe in the product? So
do you have like a pre-built survey already, or do you piecemeal this like a module together based on your diagnosis of the business, like an assessment you've done? What's that step-by-step process look like?
Yeah. So I have a data and analytics partner that I work with. They built out some really great technology. The company's called Leon. So I've been working with them for the last 2 years or so, really focused on, diagnosing these root causes.
And you have a diagnostic tool specifically for this. I believe you told me that you've developed in partnership with Leon.
So Leon has built it, and okay. I'm working specifically with their sales teams. And then I do some other sort of diagnostic, very small things to tweak it a little bit throughout. But that is sort of like the initial snapshot. And then based off of that, to your point, yes, it's a very much consultative approach to fill in and resolve these root causes through different programmings and one-on-ones with managers to really upskill not only the ability of the individual, but also move towards that, creating that psychological safety, which is so important and often overlooked in sales.
And you're upskilling individuals, but also managers as well, which I think is an important component here, right? That's what I was going to mention before, is that's a tough, it's not easy, I should say, but it's more binary to coach on in metrics, right? Mm-hmm. That's why you find the dashboard managers. It's even easier probably to coach specific to, you know, the effectiveness of our calling and our emailing and our deal management. What's not so easy to coach and mentor to is the mindset and the mental state. So can you talk about what upskilling looks like specifically for managers, and maybe what you focus on there? Anything that the audience can take away?
It's really for both. It's important to do both at the same time, individual rep and leader together. The way you want to think about stress, and you probably felt this intuitively, it's like when you're feeling stressed, the things that you know you should be doing to take better care of yourself, you start defaulting back to bad habits, or you don't necessarily do the things that you know you should be doing to take better care of yourself. So my approach is, rather than just upskilling the manager and leaving everyone on their team unequipped, and then the manager is that feeling that frustration and that stress to be like, I've told you, like, this is what you need to, like, here's how you take better care. And then it's just like that, and like that endless frustration or he or she just stops supporting the rep.
Right.
It's, we acknowledge that stress is like constant within sales. We acknowledge that both managers and reps, when they start to feel overwhelmed, are going to no longer have the awareness or no longer do the things that they want to do to take care of themselves. So to prevent that, how do we build this idea, this net where everyone has the same skill set so that we can take better care of each other, to say, one, be open talking about times when we're stressed, and two, oh, remember that thing that Jeff said, that mindset trick? Oh, you're feeling negative, or you're not thinking optimally today. Well, remember when he said that cheat code of maybe they, and maybe rather than thinking, catastrophizing and saying, right, oh, right, that's for like, I suck at sales, or if I don't close this deal, like I'm going to lose my job. Remember how Jeff said, maybe they, and you can change the story by saying, oh, well, maybe they just are still on vacation, or maybe they are interested, but I haven't created enough value. Or, and that's, again, it's a very simple mindset strategy to
spin it to the positive, and you get that internal dialogue heading in the right direction, as opposed to down this rabbit hole of negativity.
Totally. So there's like hundreds of different things that you can do. That is like one very, very minor thing of maybe they, that you can do. Another sort of mindset sort of strategy I learned from Tom Short, which is really effective, is I get to. If you think about everything, how you sort of approach a day in sales, it's so like, I have to call my leads today. I have to update the CRM. And just by simply changing that to I get to call my leads today, I get to meet someone new, a new customer,
right?
And really understanding that I get to is approaching these your day from a mindset of gratitude and opportunity. Because it's so easy to forget when we're in the midst of sales and we're thinking, this sucks, I want to give up, that there are literally billions of people around the world that would be killing for your role in the position that you have today, that it's so easy to forget. But it's like, you get an opportunity every single day to make a difference. And it really comes down to just changing the story that's playing in your head. And go ahead.
No, I love what you're saying, because I mean, I've tweeted about this, and I've done a ton of one-on-ones as a fractional manager, and you hear the venting. And a lot of times it's definitely warranted. Not every environmental condition is on point. Sometimes we miss the mark as leaders, as organizations, and we create some of the issues that we're dealing with, right? So the venting is normal, but my point is that when you're looking for a position and you're interviewing, it's funny how sometimes so quickly we forget how bad we wanted this opportunity once we get in the door, and we start having that sort of attitude of towards, you know, I have to do this, I have to do that, as opposed to looking at every day as an opportunity to make a difference in your career and these different things. I can't agree with you more on this issue, because you see it very, very often. And I'm just saying anecdotally, I don't have the data necessarily to back this up. I'm saying from my experience working one-on-one with SDRs, primarily, the top performing SDRs are extremely accountable. They're extremely self-disciplined. Whereas the ones that are struggling and that don't tend to perform very well sometimes aren't as accountable to their performance. It's a lot of finger pointing and these things. And whereas they could just turn around and say, like, I get the opportunity to use SalesLoft, I get the opportunity to use Salesforce, I get the opportunity to engage with these prospects and learn this space and, you know, develop myself for the future. So I love that you point that point out. There's actually a point in the book I was trying to go to, is that there's the motivational bucket checklist, the motivation bucket checklist, mm-hmm. on page 54 of your book. And I thought that would be a good, tool for managers when they're dealing with employees that are struggling with stress. There's a six items in the checklist. Number six is, they're dealing with a personal issue outside of work that is distracting them. And the solution you bake in is, ask them if they are okay, ask them what they need, and if there's anything you can do to support them through this challenging time. So actually giving a shit and caring about people, mm-hmm. and leaning into that instead of avoiding it. So this goes up to one, obviously. I won't go through each one of these checklists, but for those that are listening, the book itself, let's talk about the book a little bit, is a guidebook. It's not necessarily something you'd have to read from front to back. And that's what I loved about it, is I just picked it up and jumped to March because I'm in March. And so reading all those sections, like page 54 that I just mentioned, the motivation bucket checklist is a March item. So talk to us about the book a little bit, how you set it up as a guide, and you know, how you would expect people to use the book.
Yeah, it's I think one of the first things I realized very early on when I started Sales Health Alliance was, like, mental health is, if we want to, and mental performance and stress, like, there's still so much stigma around this topic. And I'm not sure if I shared this with you before, Derek, but I think the nice part about COVID was it sort of gave us a playbook to end stigma, in the sense that when you first got COVID very early on, there was so much shame and embarrassment. You're like, oh my God, should I tell someone? Like, am I going to die? There was no information. You're like, what the hell is going on?
Good point.
And then 3 years later, or today, if you get COVID, it's like, oh, you're going to be fine. Here's what you do. Everyone is like, oh, I got COVID. Like, you're going to be good. It's very normalized. So over the span of 3 or 4 years, however long it's been, thousands upon thousands of conversations, data points, and articles have taken place. Was that consistency that really led to normalizing this conversation of, I've caught COVID and it's now very normal. And that same playbook can be followed when it comes to things like mental health and stress and these daily challenges that we all go through, but still feel afraid to talk about. So the book, again, is broken out as to create, there's about 220 selling days in a year. So there's 220 days in the book to help have consistent conversations around a different aspect of mental health and stress and mindset each day, help normalize the conversation. So teams and leaders are having ongoing conversations, opposed to saying, oh, it's Mental Health Awareness Week or Mental Health Awareness Month, let's do a 90-minute session and tick that box. It's no,
like, give everybody Friday off and that will solve it. Yeah.
Totally. It's like having these ongoing conversations that's going to help make it safer feel safer for people to talk about the real stuff and the real tough times when they do happen. And to your point about what you just mentioned about sort of that meeting with one-on-ones and manager one-on-ones with SDRs, a perfect opportunity as another trick is to use that as an opportunity to say, well, Billy, when you started at this company, like, I would guess that you were so excited. You told all of your friends, like, this was the best thing that ever happened to you in your entire life in that time. Like, my question to you is, well, what's changed? And that's a question I learned from Stephen DeGroote at Brivia Consulting, which is such a powerful question, because it's like, what did change? You went from being so happy and engaged and excited to wanting to quit. And as a leader, it's like, well, what changed? That's where you want to figure out and have those conversations. And again, with the book, like Stress Less, Sell More, it allows you to have consistent conversations. It allows you to learn different things that you can be doing as a leader and as a rep to help understand what changed and what you can do to resolve it going forward.
That's spot on advice there. And that's definitely, and these little tricks that are deployable today, right? And there's a ton of them packed into the book. I mean, you talk about PIPs, even PIP 2.0 in the book. That's an area that I think every manager should definitely, every sales leader should take a look at and review, because often PIPs aren't put in place, let's just be honest, to save a person, unfortunately.
Yeah.
They're often put in to work a person out of the organization, which is unfortunate, but a reality. Mm-hmm. But those times that when a PIP is genuinely put in place to help this person course correct and find their way back to top performance or on point performance, your point in the book around that is it's a simple but and very important transition. Instead of measuring the PIP so much on outcome, you know, how much revenue, how much new opportunities and so forth, but it's also, you layer in a point of practice in the PIP 2.0, which I would appreciate. Order relief.
Go ahead. Yeah, the practice improvement program is even as simple as like how you're framing it is so important. Of is it practice, which is something that you can control, or is it like this outcome-based thing of how much revenue you're closing, which is not often in a rep's control ever. So a lot of the things that we do then is if we think about it as practice improvement plan, well, we got to look at a couple of things if we approach from that way. We got to think, okay, well, one, if the rep doesn't want to practice, well, why is that? Is this because they're no longer a good fit for the organization and they no longer believe maybe there's a disconnect on values or maybe there's a disconnect in, who knows, maybe something's changed and they no longer feel like they want to practice. And in that case, the conversation is around, I get it. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, let's look at how to help you find a place. Like, I don't know why more leaders aren't saving their skin by saying, if you don't want to be here, that's totally cool. Let me help you find a new job. That is way more effective than being like, putting on a pip, like dancing around this conversation. It's like, let's just have a conversation. If you don't want to be here, that's totally cool. I'm all good with that. Like, no worries. And then if someone's like, no, I do want to be here. Okay. So you want to practice. Well, what's getting in the way of practice? Is it because there's the time blocking is an issue? Is it because you're not getting like sleep? Is it because you're lacking a specific sales skill that I haven't trained you on? Like, what are the
environment's not conducive to it? You get ridiculed when you do practice, you know, whatever.
Totally. Yeah. Like, what are the blockers that are preventing that practice from taking place? Because that is where we need to have that conversation to help that rep feel more confident, more engaged, feel energized to want to practice because they're committed to helping grow the company and earning more money and all these things that we are know important. So it's more of a conversation around motivation, what's getting in the way of that motivation, as opposed to do this or you're gone, which is very lazy and unhelpful long-term.
Yeah. I mean, it's you're right. The easy way to, and that's management. And the difference between management and leadership is exactly these types of things. Those that are willing to have the tougher conversations, those that are willing to step outside of the quintessential people, process, technology bound, I mean, and really learn about the person and what's making them tick and or not tick very well. One of the top issues of burnout is salespeople taking vacation. A lot of people I know, myself, for instance, didn't take vacation for years because, you know, you kind of do it at your own peril, right? Every day outside of your territory, every day you're not prospecting is a day you're falling behind. And it's not like you typically get quota relief. But I think that was one of the points that you put in the book. Can you talk about where you stand on quota relief in the book?
Yeah, it's critical. And it's any sales leader, anyone that has ever worked in sales has felt how difficult it is to shut off when you're still thinking about the target or feeling like you can't step away because stepping away means you're just coming back further behind than when you left. And that makes it impossible to truly rest and recover and offload stress. And Kevin Bailey at Dream Fuel, he's the one that shared that with me, it's impossible to decompress when guilt is a primary emotion that you're feeling. So if you're feeling guilty taking vacation and you feel guilty being away while on vacation, that recovery process will never happen. Mm-hmm. So that is, as an industry, we have to realize, well, if we're playing sales for the long term, like, we need to ensure that our team and our sellers can sell effectively over the long term, which means they need adequate rest and recovery and vacation to be able to do that. Okay, if that's the case, then if we want to maximize their ability to take less vacation in the future so that they can perform better, well, yes, let's maybe lose a game. If we want to think of basketball, let's lose this game so that Steph Curry can rest his ankle, so that we can get ready for the playoffs and win the next three games. Like, that's how everywhere else in the world thinks. It's let's take a short-term loss. Yes, maybe this person goes on vacation for 2 weeks and misses quota. But if it means that we give
that person sticks around 6 months longer and hits quota two quarters in a row down the road or what.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, yes.
And we give them quota relief so that
lifetime value.
He can take vacation and still come back and his commission check isn't totally like burned to the ground. If we can do these things, then that's playing the long-term game, and that is sustainable success over that.
They can actually take a vacation with their family and not be glued to their laptop or their phone the entire time.
Just like another part of that is, I think that if we start thinking more seriously about this like long-term approach, I think again, a lifetime value of an employee and the employee experience that we'd want to create that for that person over the span of 3, 4, 5, 10 years. Well, in my mindset, I'm like, well, we should for sure be baking in maybe a 1 month sabbatical at the 4 year mark where sales people and leaders can just take
some
off.
Companies do that. I have seen companies that have done that exactly, where they give them 4 weeks, 6 weeks, and you know, people are traveling the world and they're really unplugging before they come back. I mean, I can only imagine, I've never had that. But if I had, I'd probably come back ready to run through a wall for my organization.
Totally. And at the same time, it's like, as a leader, I would want to have that in place as a leader so that I am holding myself accountable to creating a culture and building a company that people want to come back to.
Right.
And if people are going on sabbatical and not coming back, then that is a huge problem with the culture that I've built, that I'm doing something wrong. So as a metric to that point, measuring the long-term value, another great telltale sign is like, well, give people time off to go explore the world. And it's a really good sign that you're building something special if they then decide to be like, yeah, this is the place I want to be. I want to come back and work for you because of how awesome you're treating me.
Well, this has been educational. Everyone that's listening or watching, make sure you get the book, Stress Less, Sell More. It's a wonderful read. You can pop through it any order you like. Find a topic that's important to you. One that stood out to me as well was grinding in sales. That's a section that you should definitely go and take a look at. Quota relief, we talked about that. Recognition and praise, the PIP 2.0. It is numerous tools and tricks and ways to think so that you can be better armed dealing with stress, both as an individual contributor and as a manager of salespeople. So Jeff, where do you want to send people to follow you and learn more?
Yeah, find me on LinkedIn. So Jeff Risley, R-I-S-E-L-E-Y. Also feel free to check out saleshealthalliance.com. There's tons of free resources on there. And if you're interested in sort of exploring more in depth the different sort of strategies and tools that I share with sales teams and sellers to help them thrive under pressure, just go ahead and click on the mental performance section at the top of the website, and you'll find all sorts of good stuff there to get started.
You've been listening to the Sales Consultant Podcast. If you enjoyed the interview and would like to support the show, please be sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and or on Spotify. Please also consider following our LinkedIn page. If you're an industry expert or if you know an industry expert that should be on the show, message us on LinkedIn at the Sales Consultant Podcast.